And a hearty good morning. Hearty Hayo Silva. Good morning. This is Connections on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore along with Josh Arnold and Bill Newell. And of course our producer and engineer Bill Kapaski. Let's shut the music down as the world is falling apart here around me. All righty then. We are got some static. All right, there we go. We have an interesting program, I think, once again lined up here this morning, and we're going to get right at it with Bill and Josh in just a second here. But I do want to point out that our guests today include Michelle Ellick, so we'll talk a little bit about something called the Real ID, and I'm not sure what that is or why it's called that, but we'll find out. Also, we'll be chatting with Rich Fahey and old friend Rich somewhere on the planet. We'll check with him with Bill in just a second, find out a little bit more about that. And then Josh is going to talk with Brendan Pratt about a fundraiser coming up called Night at the Races. And then we'll be chatting with Channel 5's chief meteorologist Harvey Leonard, and I am so looking forward to that as well. So we've got all that coming up this morning, and let's say good morning to Josh and Bill. Gentlemen.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, really. Okay. Well, different environment today, Bill, from what we left yesterday with thousands and thousands at the Garden. The political landscape and I guess the health and science landscape is changing at an hourly rate.
It is. It has changed a lot in the last 48 hours. Area hospitals now are really doing serious screenings when you go into them. They're asking a series of questions. Rick, you touched on that actually in Tuesday's Connection program, Beverly Hospital implementing that this week. Now all the hospitals, I believe, are all doing that now in other offices as well. However, you know, we just saw the NBA cancel games. The National Hockey League this morning just announced that they've canceled their morning skates, so to speak, so you can bet that something's up with the National Hockey League now. The NCAA basketball tournament, no fans. But yet, here in Massachusetts, the MIAA is going ahead with their tournaments, although they have some tournaments out in the western part of the state where there'll be no fans allowed into the game. So we'll see what happens. The St. Mary's girls basketball team and the Lynn English boys basketball teams are supposed to be at the DCU Center on Saturday with fans, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I don't know about that. I mean, yesterday it felt a little different, didn't it, Bill? I mean, it was great to see all the participation. The crowds were very, very appropriate. They were rooting for their teams. The exchanges between the two student bodies across the Garden floor was really fun to watch. But there still was a little bit of a different feel about it, don't you think?
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's just no doubt about it that it is a little bit different. It's not funny anymore. But the science is, as I get it, is that, that you just need to take serious precautions. And so we saw even in the news today, Salem State University, I don't know if they totally announced this, but I think they're considering a second week of spring break. Man, I would have loved that when I was in college, a second week of spring break. Not that I ever went south. I never did that. But man.
Well, let me tell you something, Bill.
Now I'm making fun of that too.
Well, you know.
I'm not. But anyway.
Laughter's the best.
There is some science to it. And I saw an article today. I think it was an AP article. I'll give the item credit for it in Lynn. But this virus can stay on a surface for 3 days. And I was thinking more of it was transmitted, through the air. But it can be on the surfaces too. So there's just so much to be careful of.
And to learn about. Yeah, I thought it had to be transmitted in different ways as well. But just to go back, I'm class of 1970 at UMass, and kids would ask me, well, UMass where? Wait a minute. When I went to UMass, there was only one UMass. It was the University of Massachusetts out in Amherst, which we called it, but it's Amherst by their standard. But anyway, the spring of 1970, I don't know if you guys recall that. You might be too young, but it was the moratorium. It was a nationwide moratorium. And we were given the option at that point to take our current grade in the springtime or to do final exams. We could skip the final exams. And I think that's the only semester I made Dean's List because I skipped the final exams. So something similar, I think, on a more serious note, of course. But it does also seem to be that if we do what's recommended and just take it easy and use your smarts, this thing will pass over. Fairly easily if we just pay attention. I don't know if the economic situation is going to recover quickly.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to take some time. You're right on that piece. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we do have a link up on this post here, on the Connections post, for the latest news from Massachusetts. So if you're looking for late news from the state, this stuff is always being updated on the our North Shore Today post. We have a complete update from the city of Salem on what they're thinking. So there's all kinds of cities and towns putting information out there. So if you want that information, it's, I mean, if you look at the Salem piece, which is probably pretty comprehensive on North Shore Today, but yeah, so there's all kinds of stuff happening for sure.
We are at Rotary chit-chatting about the crisis, and you know, I said to, made the comment, gee, you know, I would always surprises me. You go into a men's room at a restaurant, and there's a sign that says employees have to wash their hands before, you know, they leave the room. And I said, you know, doesn't everybody have to do that? And one of the people at the table said, you know, you go to the thing, you wash your hands, you know, soap and lather them up and do a really good job washing your hands, and then you dry them off under the thing, and then you go and you, what do? I said, you leave. He says, no, you touched the doorknob, but the guy who didn't wash his hands.
That's right. Yep.
And anyway.
Well, we got to pay attention. Bill, I want to ask you about Rich Fahey, old friend Rich Fahey. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Oh yeah, well, Rich is a great guy, hardworking guy. I'll tell you, he's south right now, but he's a longtime news and sports reporter for the Item. That's where we knew him from many years ago. You know, after 1970, I might add. But anyway, a little long time ago. But anyway, he has a blog on theater on Boston Stages. We have a link to that on our website as well. He's going to be updating that a lot come the month of April. There's a lot of things happening, and so Rich is going to be coming back with us. But I think he'll share some stories about how he got into that entertainment angle, and it's really kind of an unlikely kind of career move for him. But he's been doing it now for 25 years.
Can't wait. Looking forward to that. Josh, Night at the Races, a little teaser on that?
Yeah, one of the fundraisers that the Gloucester Rotary Club does, which enables it to give money to a lot of nonprofit organizations around town, is coming up on March 20th, and we have the committee chairman, Brendan Pratt, is going to explain to us all about that.
All righty then. And Bill, finally, a lot of basketball going on yesterday. We still don't know what's going to happen on Saturday, but I would ask you to point out to all of the posts and pictures and sounds and sites that we have up on the website.
Yeah, we have there's some great stories there of teams that, you know, Beverly had just a fantastic year, but man, what an incredible team that Whitman Hansen team is. And then, again, the overachieving North Reading girls basketball team bows out yesterday. What a great game between St. Mary's and Burke that you and I saw, Rick, in boys basketball, and the St. Mary's girls advance on, too, in the tournament. I just want to say I'm looking forward to hear from Harvey Leonard. And I was just thinking, just before opening my mouth a moment ago here, is that, you know, when you talk about, you know, they use these words like trust and you depend on and stuff, but you know something, when it really comes to Harvey Leonard and the weather, I really trust him. I mean, he's the guy I turn to for the weather. So it'll be great to hear from Harvey Leonard.
I agree, and I think it's amazing the way that you and I were talking about yesterday, the technology enables him to do what he does. And I was just thinking today, I could look out the window and not see 30 feet from here and know what's going on, but he can be down in Needham, and he can tell me exactly what's happening outside my window. So it's pretty cool. Lots to ask about, and just a fantastic career, and I'm looking forward to that. All right, gentlemen, let's get this show on the road.
You got it.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. Check in with you later. We will be having our first interview coming up in just a minute. Josh Arnold will be talking with Michelle Ellix about the Real ID, so stay with us.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com. Catch the big names in North Shore news and sports on MSO News Sports Podcasts, the North Shore's podcast leader for both news and sports features, connecting you to the North Shore.
Welcome back to Connections, and our first guest, Michelle Alex, who is a community outreach person with the Mass Department of Transportation Registry of Motor Vehicles. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. Great to be here.
Well, I wanted to chat today a little bit about the Real ID. There's a lot of stories out there and confusion, I think, about what the Real ID is and how it interfaces with renewing a Massachusetts license, and I thought you'd be a great person to share that with our listening audience.
Great. Well, we really appreciate the opportunity, Josh. So we want to let folks know that beginning on October 1st, 2020, a person will need to have either a real ID or other acceptable ID, such as a valid passport, to fly within the United States, and as well to access certain federal facilities, Josh, like secure federal office buildings, like a federal courthouse, or some of the larger federal Social Security offices that have a security desk at the entrance. So again, on October 1st, 2020, a person will need to have either a real ID or a valid passport or another acceptable document to enter certain federal office buildings or to fly within the United States.
And it's not, I mean, it used to be that you had to have a passport to leave the country or to come back into it, but you're saying that the ID lets you go from Massachusetts to Nevada.
That's right. The Real ID, it's a federally compliant credential. So the Real ID, Josh, allows a person to fly within the United States. So obviously a person will still need to have a valid passport to leave the United States, but the Real ID will allow a person to fly within the U.S., fly domestically.
And so when people renew their license, they a person renews their Massachusetts driver's license, they will, with the right documentation, cover the Real ID requirement.
So what happens is, absolutely, while a person comes into the Registry of Motor Vehicles to renew their driver's license or their Massachusetts ID card, they, at that time, can get the Real ID, and in fact what we will do, the customer needs to fill out an application, and the first question on that application is, which would you like, Real ID or standard? Because keep in mind, Josh, not everyone will need to have a Real ID, so it's important to let people know that if a person does not plan to fly, or if they don't have any need to get into a secure federal office building, they can continue to maintain their standard level of credential. So when you come in to renew your driver's license, you tell us that you'd like the Real ID. You need to bring in additional documentation, and we will put that star on your driver's license or your ID card, and that will tell security that that is a federally compliant credential.
Great. Now, the documentation that people have to bring is interesting, and can you share with us a couple of things? One, can you share with us what that includes, but also how do people learn about that? Is there a place that they can send away for a guidebook, or can they go online if they have access to the internet and see a guide, or how does all that work?
Oh, that's a great question. So people can access a handy checklist. We have an identification documents checklist, and that's available online from the registry's website. And you can get to that website at mass.gov/ID. Again, that's mass, M-A-S-S, .gov/ID. And on that website, Josh, we have our acceptable documents checklist, and it spells out exactly which documents we can accept. Now, keep in mind, this federal mandate was created by Congress of 2005. So we have been provided with detailed instructions on which documents that we can accept. So basically, when a person comes in to renew their driver's license or their Mass ID card, they would need to bring in one document proving lawful presence and date of birth. So someone can choose from more than 11 documents to prove lawful presence or date of birth, but something like a valid U.S. passport or an original U.S. birth certificate or even a certified version of a U.S. birth certificate. Keep in mind, if someone's going to use a birth certificate to prove lawful presence, make sure that the birth certificate was issued by a city or town, a municipality, essentially. And that's what this checklist lists. It really goes into great detail.
So if my passport...
What documents we can accept, Josh?
If my passport expired, but it still has my picture on it, and it was just maybe a couple of months ago, that doesn't work? Because it'll show that
you're right.
I am...
It does not. No, the passport needs to be valid and unexpired. So, again, a great question. If your passport has expired, we would not be able to accept that as a document proving lawful presence.
So if I can't find my social...
other choices.
If I can't find the little Social Security card you got when you were 15 or 16 or earlier than that...
Well, the Social Security card is a document that we can accept to prove Social Security number. So that's the second step, Josh. So first step is proving lawful presence with something like a valid U.S. passport, a birth certificate, even a permanent resident card, a green card, and the list goes on. Like I said, about 11 documents can prove lawful presence. The second step, Josh, is proving your Social Security number. So obviously a person would... can use their Social Security card, make sure, because obviously Social Security card proves your Social Security number. But if you cannot find your Social Security card, or maybe you laminated it years ago because you wanted to protect it and keep it forever, well, there are other documents that we can accept. For instance, a W-2 form that it displays all 9 digits of your social, or a 1099 form that displays all 9 digits of your Social Security number, as well as a pay stub. So you can see there are alternatives. But here's the thing. If you decide that you want to use your Social Security card to prove Social Security number, but it's been laminated or maybe you cannot find it, you can go online to socialsecurity.gov and create an online account and request a card online, and it will be sent to you within 2 weeks in the mail. So that's a free replacement Social Security card if you go online to socialsecurity.gov.
So
the other thing a person could do is go in person, of course, to a Social Security office and request a replacement card. So you have some options in terms of proving Social Security number. And then the last step, Josh, when you come in to renew your driver's license is you need to prove Massachusetts residency. Want the real ID? They need to just bring in two proofs of residency, and one could be your current driver's license or your current Massachusetts ID card. That's a document that proves Mass residency. As long as it has not expired, we can accept that. And then the other could be a bill dated within 60 days of your visit to the registry, or maybe a current lease, mortgage, or rental contract. There are more than 25 documents a person can choose from on this checklist that will prove mass residency. So those are the steps. Prove lawful presence, prove social security number, and prove mass residency. And you can renew your driver's license and at the same time get that star put on it, so it will be considered to be a federally compliant credential. I forgot to mention, Josh, you can renew your driver's license not only at any participating Registry of Motor Vehicles office across the state, but also if you're a AAA member, you can renew your driver's license and at the same time get a real ID at any participating AAA office if you're a AAA member.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to share with our listening audience
the intricacies of the real ID and Massachusetts license renewal. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you so much, Josh.
Take care. Have a good day. Thank
you. You too. Bye.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our offices or call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, capeannsavings.bank.
Member FDIC. Member DIF. Equal housing lender.
Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
Rich Fahey is joining us from the blog or the website On Boston Stages. We do have a link to it on our post here. Rich, a former writer for the Daily Item of Lynn and the Boston Globe and so on. And Rich, welcome. Great to be talking with you.
Hey, Bill. Great to talk to you again.
Rich, we covered a lot of sports over the years. Back when you were at the Item, you went on to news, went on to entertainment, and I guess tell us the story about how you're now doing a lot of entertainment.
Well, it started about 25, 26 years ago. Bill Brotherton, who was the head of Living Arts back then, asked me if I wanted to do a review of The Christmas Carol at North Shore, which I think was in its second or third year. I think it was the first year the legendary David Coffey was playing Scrooge. And I said, sure, I'd love to give it a try. I'd been a failed actor at three different levels, high school, college, and community theater. So I said, well, why not? This is something I've always loved to do. So I'd give it a try. And I gave it a try, and I found out it was something I really enjoyed doing. I went on to start doing more shows, and eventually Bill moved on to a different job. I eventually became the Living Arts editor and started to do a lot of reviews, I would say, 50, 60 a year, and doing a lot of entertainment reviews. Over the years, I've gotten to interview people like Jerry Lewis in a group setting, Mel Brooks, then one-on-one interviews with Tom Selleck, interview with Julie Andrews, with some other reporters, but some of the biggest names in show business. It was a lot of fun doing that, and then keeping up with features on theater people and shows and doing reviews. So I got to be, you know, really immersed in it. And after I left the Item, I went to work part-time at the Globe, and so doing sports at Associated Press and working for the Globe part-time. I started to do theater-related pieces for the Globe, a lot of pieces about local actors and actresses that, who live on the North Shore area and from the North Shore, you know, Susan Chella, people such as that, and who are on Broadway or doing national tours or local shows in Boston. So it got to be something that I really got immersed in. And although I wasn't reviewing for the Globe, I was writing dozens of theater-related features. So even after I left reviewing at the Item, I stayed on the press list for all the greater Boston theater companies and reviewed, you know, went to see the shows and I was also on the board for more than 20 years of the former Ernie Awards, which was one of the two major awards given out by Boston Theater Critics. We did it for 20-something years. I was on the board for, I think, 21 years. So it was something that I stayed with. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, I decided I wanted to start reviewing again. So I just started my own website, a blog on bostonstages.com. And I stayed on all the press lists for every major Greater Boston theater company. And I've been doing about 90 to 100 reviews a year. I think a few less maybe last year, and this year I'm missing the month of March while I'm away here in Florida for the month of March. But when I'm not, I'm going to 2-3 shows a week usually, writing reviews. And the theater companies, nowadays it's the bloggers and people online reviews are very, very important, because the number of paid print reviewers is, I can count them in Boston on my hand. There might be 2, there might be 3. I mean, once you get past Don or Coyne from the Globe, there are very, very few. So the theater companies want feedback. They want reviews. And online people kind of fill up the gap, especially those with experience, and that people know they're going to do a professional job and they're going to write something that people can, look at and use as a reference point in deciding whether to attend the show. So it's much more important than it was when you had 10 or 12 critics. And what's interesting is, as you might know, Boston's become a theater tryout town again. Just before I left, we were invited to see, and it didn't work out the way it was supposed to, Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker in the Plaza Suite at the Colonial, which has become a tryout venue for Broadway again under the Ambassador Theater Group, which leases the Colonial from Arts from Emerson College. So they're bringing in shows like Moulin Rouge and for us to review here in Boston before they get to Broadway. And it helps them get feedback on what's working, what may not be working, what needs to be tweaked before Broadway. We also did recently, we reviewed American Utopia, David Byrne's American Utopia at the Colonial before that went on to Broadway. So it gives the producers a experienced cadre of reviewers giving their input before that show goes before the Broadway critics. So it appears to be working. It appears the Ambassador is happy. It ended up we did not review Plaza Suite here in Boston because the night we were supposed to review, Sarah Jessica Parker was ill. She had gotten the bug from her husband, Matthew, before, and they had to bring the understudy in for that night. I mean, so it was. They asked us not to review since that wouldn't have been the show on Broadway.
Yeah.
But it was still fun to see. We came in and saw the show anyway and got a look at what it's going to look like as it opens. I believe it may have just opened on Broadway. If not, it's imminent. That it opens.
Hey, Rich, I know my time is short here. It's an unusual segment here, but I want to get back to you. But I want to ask you this one question here. And there's so much other stuff to talk about with you. But, I'm thinking back to the old movies, the ones that were done in the 40s or 50s where the Broadway reviewer and the newspapers come out in the morning. They're looking for the review. The reviewer slams the show. The show has to close and so on. Have you ever really panned anything?
Sure, absolutely. I would say because the theater is so good in Greater Boston right now, the theater scene, and it's a competition is so tough, but there's so much talent that it's very rare something is really, really bad. But once in a great while, something is, unfortunately, and you owe a duty to be. But when you do criticize a show, you have to be very specific. You have to say, this didn't work because of this, because of that. Someone was miscast. The direction wasn't right. The production values weren't good, or maybe all of the above. Or the actor or actress didn't do a good job portraying the character. Because you can't go in and say, "Oh, this just stinks," and pay no attention to it. That's not fair to anyone who first of all the people who are thinking about whether to come, and also the people who put on the show. So you have to be very specific and why you didn't like the show. You know, and I think if you do that, the producers, the directors, the people involved with the show may not be happy that you didn't like it, but they'll respect the fact that you had very specific criticisms. And in some cases, I've made those criticisms, and I've seen that they actually corrected that part of the show that I might have criticized during the run. If I've criticized a makeup or something I thought was incorrect, I've seen them fix the makeup. I'll fix the costume. I'll fix
Rich, I can't imagine you criticizing makeup. Come on now.
No, I actually did. It was funny. It was a production of Les Miserables, and there's two characters, the innkeeper and his wife, if you've seen the show, who are just a real mess. And they were the cleanest bums I've ever seen. They had no dirt, no, you know. So I just said, you know, make them dirty them up. Dirty them up a little, and they did.
Well, I can see you making that criticism. Okay. Hey, Rich, my time is up, but what I want to do is check back with you soon sometime because, you know, I'm just thinking that there is a lot to talk about in theater. There's more than meets the eye, at least for my eye anyways, and I'd love to have you. You're a great resource, and I know we could have other great stories that we could share together. I just think that'd be fantastic. So hopefully you can come back and join us again real soon here, but enjoy the sun.
Okay, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Yeah, Rich, we'll be right in touch with him. Rich Fahey from, again, the blog is on Boston Stages, the website, and we do have a link to it on our website as well.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Welcome back to Connections, and our next guest is Brendan Pratt, who is the chairman of the Night at the Races Committee for the Gloucester Rotary Club. Brendan, welcome to the program.
Josh, thanks for having me.
Well, I start by you just shared something with me that I didn't know coming in. So what is the latest of the event?
We've been talking all week about what to do with a lot of events being postponed or in the area, is that we were going to continue moving forward. However, the mayor of Gloucester yesterday came out with an announcement that she would like all large gatherings not to occur for the next couple weeks, and in conjunction with some other organizations in the area postponing or canceling events, we decided that it's in the best interest for us to postpone this event.
Okay.
To a date to be determined later. We haven't decided what date, and we have not made that announcement officially yet either, but that is going to be the direction we're at right now.
Very well. And tell us about what the Night of the Races involves, when and if it does occur, and why it's so much fun, and how people participate and all of that.
Absolutely. Well, I went to my first one last year, and we had about 120 to 130 people from the Cape Ann area, a lot of business leaders and people who like to support various organizations in the Cape Ann area show up. For Night of the Races, what we do is we have simulcast racing where people can bet on who the winner will be. There's fake odds, and there's a lot of excitement. And we packed the room at the Cruiseport in Gloucester, and we did about 10 races. And at the end of the night, the person who had the most wins won prizes. We also had silent auctions, raffle prizes, door prizes. People dress up in derby gear, wear funny, the hats. That they wear at the Derby, and there's a winner for the best hat as well. So there's a lot of different prizes, and all the money goes to all the great organizations throughout Cape Ann as well.
Great. And the Rotary Club gives upwards of $50,000 to $100,000 a year to local and international organizations for their benefit, including scholarships to the local graduates.
Absolutely.
Well, we're appreciative of your being on. It's timely, and I didn't expect the announcement, but I'm not given that the NBA has announced that they're suspending their season, and we're expecting something similar from the National Hockey League. This doesn't come as a big surprise.
Yeah, no, everything is very fluid right now, especially with the NBA and with the NHL probably coming out today. It's just that's where everything's headed, and we thought we had no choice to do but to say it.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on our show and letting us be among the first to hear this. And we'll have you back later when things become a little more clear, whether this goes forward or when it might be rescheduled.
Josh, it sounds great. I'd love to join you guys again.
Thanks, Brendan.
Take care.
All right, this is Connections on MSO. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposkin, our director, of course, Bill Newell. And still to come, we're going to be talking with Channel 5's WCVB-TV's chief meteorologist, Harvey Leonard. Looking forward to that. And want to remind you that we're going to find out about what's going to happen on Saturday with the Division II state championship games. Division I, excuse me, with Lynn English. Supposed to be playing out in Worcester, but we'll see what happens there. And again, just about everything being postponed right now. And I, you know, they're suspending play in the NBA, as you just mentioned. It looks like the NHL is going to follow suit. And of course, the NCAA's March Madness, no crowds. So everything has to, you got to keep your eye on everything. And Mayor Savathia Romeo Taken in Gloucester asking people not to gather in large crowds. So that is the first postponement that you're aware of from Rotary, certainly.
Yes. Well, there was a bulletin out from the district governor saying that they were curtailing some things at the district level, but it wasn't a blanket kind of thing, but they would keep us posted about if that changed, and this was the first one I heard. Mm-hmm. So I was at that meeting Tuesday when it was all go, so it didn't. It's a surprise to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's got to happen right now, and this to me is sort of like the blizzards that we've had, where everybody just battens down the hatches for a few days and you stay in. Although this is going to be, I think, a lot longer, but I don't think it's going to be as restrictive in terms of intra-city or intra-town movement and so on. But we'll see. And we have to keep our eye on that. All right, we have to take a break here. When we come back, we'll have our next interview with Harvey Leonard. This is MSO News Sports, and this is Connections on this Thursday. If you want to get a hold of us, suggestions, comments, complaints, msonewsports@gmail.com or
joshonald@verizon.net.
Send the complaints to him.
I was waiting for that.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
The North Shore is listening to msonewsports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hey, this is Matt Williams from the Salem News. Make sure that you listen to our weekly high school sports podcast, where you can get all the news and happenings in the North Shore high school sports and beyond with myself, Phil Stacey, Bill Newell, and Nick Giannino.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we are back live now with Connections, and my great pleasure to bring on Channel 5 WCVB-TV's chief meteorologist, Harvey Leonard. And Harvey Leonard, welcome to MSO.
Thank you, Rick. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Great to be talking with you, and I should point out that Harvey Leonard, of course, one of the most familiar faces in all of New England, many, many awards as a meteorologist, and as Bill Newell was saying earlier, one of the most trusted guys on television. But that said, I have to apologize to you, Harvey, because I'm sure that down in Needham, you've probably heard me screaming from Gloucester epithets at you through the television set. When my ski report is not what I want it to be, and my wife chides me constantly, well, not constantly, it's not that often, but my wife chides me and says, you know, it's not Harvey's fault. So I apologize for those screams that have directed at you over some of the years.
Well, it's okay. You know, my hearing's not as good as it used to be, so I'm not hearing them all anymore.
Well, I'm of the same generation, and I've got one bad ear as well. But I can't wait to ask you some questions because you know you've been through some of the technological changes and so forth. But first, I want to ask you about your own interest in meteorology and maybe how you got started with it initially.
Well, basically, it's been an interest and a passion ever since I can remember being young enough to actually have a memory. As a little kid, always fascinated by the storms, and most especially the winter storms, the snowstorms. So for me, in terms of the most exciting, most dramatic weather, I would say winter storms would be number one, tropical storms and hurricanes would be number two, then would come the severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. But obviously those are the most impactful, although cold waves, heat waves, I mean, they do have effects, obviously, on people as well. But definitely the winter storms. I can't explain why. Something in the blood. Don't know if maybe I was conceived during a snowstorm.
Uh-oh.
Or born on a snowstorm. I don't think so, but who knows? But it's just there. And there's, a lot of people have a big interest in weather, but there's a comparatively small percentage that are semi-obsessed. And I'm kind of in that percentage, especially, again, when it comes to storms and winter storms.
Well, I know that comes across, obviously, on television. And I want to ask you, Bill asked me to ask you this, before the technology that you have now, in Gloucester, the Cape Ann area, there used to be, back in the 60s and 70s, a number you could dial to get the local weather. And I think the man's name was Barker. And it was he was called the Old Salt, and he said in a newspaper article that back in that era, the best you could hope for an accurate forecast would be 6 hours out. That was it. Now, if we go back to the early days, Harvey, what is there a particular story that you can remember where you got it right with the technology you had, but maybe some of the other guys didn't?
Well, I guess in my case, it would have to be related to the blizzard of 78. Now we did have computer models at that time, but, you know, they've come a long way. Since then, we have, much better observing system to get initial sets of data into those weather computers. We have faster processing power to run these computer models more frequently. So it's come a long way. We did have computer models, but as a forecaster in those days, you would have to make much greater leaps from what you were literally seeing in those computer models to what you might actually have to forecast. Now, it's closer to the idea of tweaks, modifications, using your past experience, knowing the idiosyncrasies of the local climate, but the computer models are even greater assets to us now by a long shot than they were then. But I mean, I was maybe a few years removed from graduate school in college, and, you know, I studied meteorology, and so I was very attuned to the very latest that was available at that time. And you had to be able to understand that a storm might form, even a very strong one, or become a very strong one, and you're making the forecast about that without the storm even in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we go back to the late 70s, it was helpful to me to be of the generation I was at that time, being young, because I was, you know, closer to being fresh out of, as I said, college and grad school, and learning about all this and able to apply it. Plus the fact that what I was seeing was so classic in the sense of getting getting cold, bitter cold air established before the storm, cold high pressure in Canada. We know in weather, we have to be able to know what's going on upstairs, meaning thousands of feet above us. And it turns out that disturbances up there in the atmosphere are what trigger the storms that develop on the surface. So seeing that something very vigorous was going to be happening so-called upstairs, I knew that it's going to translate to a storm downstairs, meaning at the surface and near the Carolina or Virginia coast with the cold high pressure to the north. That's the classic setup. And so sometimes you're looking at weather patterns and they're a little more confusing or they're subtle or the disturbances aren't so pronounced or so strong. I would kind of call that like mixed vegetables. But what I was looking at for that setup was basically meat and potatoes. One big, enormous cold high pressure area and one what was going to be very intense storm. And we were in just the right spot between that storm to the south and the cold high pressure to the north to get the squeeze play of northeasterly winds and all the moisture that the storm would produce. And we have that huge moisture source of the Atlantic Ocean to the east of us. So, you know, that became over time because we've got the video clips, you know, from several days before the storm, which become hilarious in terms of what I look like then compared to now, but that's a sad story we don't have to get into. But the idea of the storm, and so it wasn't as the forecasts weren't widespread like they would be now. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see as huge a difference in the forecast, meteorologist to meteorologist, station to station, now compared to then, because the computer models have come a long way. And the word is going to get out more uniformly and earlier. So many more modes, ways to communicate, you know, digital and so on, where then it was basically your three TV stations, you know, 4, 5, and 7, and you have to wait for those scheduled newscasts. Right. Now there are many more of them. So now, you know, information is on demand. Then you had to wait, and there are only a few different stations and a few different meteorologists that are going to be making those forecasts. So I think it really stood out for those who saw it at the time, and for those who didn't, who've seen when we do our anniversary report on the storm. By now, most people have seen, you know, those clips and understood, you know, that, you know, it was a horrendous storm, and it was horrendous on the North Shore. I mean, the coastal situation was just horrendous.
Mm-hmm. Horrendous. Well, I'm aware of it. I remember it, Josh.
Yeah, Harvey, I wanted to ask you a question about your forecasting. Is there any part of what you do there's a uniqueness because it's New England, that you develop an expertise? These are things that are more prone to New England that wouldn't happen in Oklahoma or somewhere else?
Well, yeah, definitely so, because we're at the latitude, okay, you know, with often cold air to the north coming from Canada. We can certainly have warm air from the south, and we're going to wind up near the battle zone with some frequency, which means we're going to have action. We're going to have storms. We have a tremendous moisture source to the east, the Atlantic Ocean, and so that adds moisture to the storms. But also, when we get like a northeast wind coming from the northeast, it could be coming from hundreds of miles out in the ocean or originating there. And so that means that wind and ocean can have hundreds of miles to pass over. Waves can build, winds can strengthen. So we get very, potentially very impactful type of storms and nor'easters. We also think about how eastern Massachusetts juts out. If you look at the east coast of the United States, you then realize that you can have a hurricane around the Bahamas that could move northward, and the first landmass it would touch would actually be either Long Island, New York, or the south coast of New England.
Okay.
So it's like a direct shot if you get the jet stream to be able to direct that storm northward. And even though our ocean waters are cooler, a little cooler even in the summer than what's ideal for hurricanes, a lot of times the storms are accelerating, being drawn up by a very strong jet stream from south to north. So the faster it moves, the less time it spends over the slightly colder waters closer to us, the less time it has to weaken. So we can get hit very impactfully, a period of time, but they can be very severe for the period of time that they are occurring here.
You know, I you are a terrific explainer and storyteller. I'm gathering that, looking at your biography here, that you do teach. And also, I think a key component of what you do is similar to what sportscasters do when they're broadcasting an event. You don't read from a script. You have to assimilate all the information that you've been working on over the hours, and then you have to put that into 3 or 4 minutes of something that some dummy like me can understand.
Well, the last part of what you said is incorrect, of course. But yes, it's true. But remember that that's also my area of so-called expertise, mm-hmm. of passion, of interest, and experience. And I guess the thing is, for some reason, the passion is still there. I mean, I don't think that will ever really will really end for me, because it's just a part of who I am. So, you know, if you're really interested in something, if you've educated yourself and doing your best to keep up with what's going on in the field, you're doing something you like, you're working at a terrific TV station to work at with wonderful people. I mean, in the studio there, it's really not like being on television. It's like you're hanging out with your friends.
That's cool. Yeah.
And you're doing your job at the same time. So the atmosphere is set so nice at the station, and we're allowed to be who we are, and obviously that's great because that gives you freedom of expression, but we're all also very passionate and professional about our work.
Absolutely.
That combination, you know, it's great. So when you work in an atmosphere like that, it makes it, more joyous, and it's great. So, fortunately, I'm still doing it.
Sounds like a great play. And, you know, that's consistent. I've had the good fortune to meet Natalie Jacobson back in the day, and my son, who was Down syndrome, met her on with his mom down on Nantucket, I think it was, for a concert, and she said, come on up here, it was Boston Pops, and she was wonderful, and they've seen him in other events. We know Mike Lynch very well. We met Bob Halloran yesterday, and there is that sense of camaraderie there. Now, I got to ask you, go back to that 78 storm here for 1 second, and maybe other storms. Did you get stuck in the studio?
I did. Now, the story behind that for me is that storm hit on a Monday and Tuesday, and I had been talking about it on the air beginning the Thursday prior, which is really unheard of in those days.
Okay. Yep.
And then I talked it up a little bit more on Friday, and then Saturday night I was absolutely convinced that, we were going to get nailed. So I did not work Sunday, the day before the storm, and the storm strikes on Monday, and it was Sunday night around 11:30. As soon as our newscast was over, I wasn't on it. I was on Channel 7 in those days.
Mm-hmm.
I said to my wife, I was all packed up with a suitcase, and I said, I'm going in, to the station because I have to be on early tomorrow morning. And I said, I have no idea when I'm going to be back. And she was 6 months pregnant. She didn't appreciate that remark very much. And so, I kissed her, and then I was in Boston for a week. So, and that's what happened. They put us up at the Parker House, and that was the story. So, of course, I was on that morning, and then we wound up, in as continuous a coverage as you could do in those days. During the second day of the storm on Tuesday, and then I remember we did, big special, and then I remember being at Hull, doing a part of the special from there where all the coastal damage was. So, it was an amazing time in Boston.
I remember.
Following that storm, it was just cold and dry for like 3 weeks. And even in the city, the snow stayed pretty white for a long time. Because it was so nice and cold. You weren't getting much melting, but you had this nice, clear, clean, cold air mass. And people were actually cross-country skiing
yes.
on the streets of Boston.
Yes, yes, yes. And all over the place. I remember it vividly because I had a young family at the time as well. I want to ask you about your work day now, because it obviously has changed over the years. I know that formerly working in my summer job, I'm a retired math teacher, a high school math teacher, but my summer job was working at a local radio station in Salem. And to put together a five-minute newscast sometimes would take almost an hour with the old editing equipment we had and so on. What you do with the graphics, the videos, the audio, the green screen or blue screen, whatever it is, I don't even know how you learned how to do that. What's your typical day like now, Harvey, in this day and age?
Okay, well, the difference is, you know, going back, you know, several decades ago, basically on my shift, you had a 6 p.m. news and an 11 p.m. news, two newscasts a day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm now on eight newscasts a day in the same shift. So, and they're all broken down as like half-hour newscasts so that each individual half-hour can stand on its own merit. So for me, it's 4 p.m., 4:30 p.m., 5 p.m., 5:30 p.m., 6 p.m., 2.5 hours straight. Then we get a half-hour break when the network news is on, but we have a 7 p.m. news as well, which is really highly watched. It seems to be very appreciated by people who are not home in time to see a 6 p.m. news from work. So so during that time, it's pretty continuous. And not only that, but it's not usually just one appearance in the half hour.
Yep.
Because weather now usually has a brief, looking at the next 12 to 24 hours occurs early in the newscast. Then you have your full newscast, a full weathercast, you know, a little deeper into the half hour. So it's many, many more appearances. So our graphic systems, fortunately, have now been designed and upgraded in a way that it makes it easy for us to be on the air that frequently and have the latest information be able to be displayed graphically by the idea of having as much as possible automated. So, for example, most of our radar and satellite imagery and temperature maps that are current temperatures, are all of this was set up initially so that it gives us more time to help with the forecast. And there's still certain maps, projected maps and things like that, that we're massaging and using our abilities to create graphics, but we've created as much as we can in an automated way, because speed of preparation is essential when you're on the air so much.
I think it's mind-boggling to see how often you're on and how you can update this stuff. It's just incredible knowing, you know, some of the stuff that might be going on behind the scenes. And speaking of which, can you tell me a little bit about your staff? Because you're the main man. You pull the trigger. But what's it like working with, or who else works with you on the team?
Oh yeah, we really have a it really is a great team. Now we have Cindy Fitzgibbon, who's on the Eye Opener News and Noontime, and she is phenomenal. I mean, she's just what you see on the air is what you get. She's an incredible person. She's a terrific meteorologist. She's such a hard worker. She has such high standards, and it all shows. So that is great. And I love the fact that, you know, with Cindy on in the mornings and I'm on in the evenings, there's usually a lot of continuity because the way we go about, forecasting is pretty similar and so on. Now we have Kellyanne Chickalese, who's on our weekend mornings, and she'll usually fill in for Cindy. And she is really just great. She's such a nice person, and she's bright, also very hard worker. We have Mike Wonkum, and people see Mike a lot because Mike is on our weekend nights, but he's also on Friday nights. And even for part of the year, I've shortened my schedule a little bit. So you see a little bit more of Mike as well. And, you know, he's also, you know, he's a very talented guy and very, very personable, a lot of energy. He's been doing this for quite a while as well. And then we have what I'll call our unsung hero in the department, the jack-of-all-trades meteorologist, A.J. Burnett. You will see A.J. on the air occasionally doing weather, filling in, but he also has great ability to report live in the field during weather events. He's actually working on a report that's going to air soon on climate change. But he also is a computer graphics whiz. So he does so much of our creative and setup work with our graphic systems, and is just a tremendous aid to all of us, and especially me, because it allows me to really focus on forecasting and being on the air as much as I am. And AJ has set up a lot of things for us, a lot of what we would call templates, which it's very easy to just plug in what you need to plug in for that given situation. So it's really a terrific team. All nice people as well, and we need each other because that's the only way you can all have time off. You know, and we do the best we can. We don't really treat it as a seniority thing as much as a need thing. And once in a while, there may be a conflict where two people need the same time or period of time off, and we'll just go by, you know, which is the more important thing on a personal level. But, you know, the ability to work with one another just makes it much better for everybody as well as for the station.
You sound like a head coach talking about his assistant coaches with our sports.
Well, you really do.
I get it. Co-coaches then, all right. And in fact, AJ advised Bill and me about our website quite a bit, so we appreciate that.
There you go. So you see what I mean.
Absolutely.
Really, he's just such a bright guy.
So much more I want to ask you, but I know your time is valuable. I want to ask you, though, one more thing. My wife helps me get dressed because I'm colorblind, so we have to do the Garanimals thing with the different things that match for the ties and so on. But and being a little bit colorblind and not knowing anything about style, I am so impressed the way you look every day with your suits on, and I just have to compliment you on that, and I wish I could do that.
Well, that's amazing. I really appreciate that. But I have to tell you that this is hard for me to explain, but it's only really been in recent years that I've become even more aware of that. So, you know,
yeah.
I do, you know, whatever it is, every 2 years or whatever, upgrade the wardrobe somewhat. I'm really very involved. I'm actually sensing color combinations. But the ironic thing is, I've never been like that most of my life.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that's great. I appreciate that. I don't know, maybe I'm just getting more relaxed about certain things so I can spend some time concentrating on others that I never did my entire life.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because maybe it's, you know, with age comes wisdom or something like that, because I never would have noticed it before, but geez, every day it's like, holy crap, look at this, the way this guy looks. And one other little question that you don't have to answer, but it looks like you've maintained a really good conditioning program. Do you even have time to do that?
Not quite as good as it might look, but I think the part of me that's in the worst shape is partially camouflaged. But anyway, no, that's where, you know, get the right on the you know, shirt, tie, and jacket. And rough something. But anyway.
Well, it says you're an outdoorsman in your bio, so that's what I was alluding to.
Yeah, no, I do love tennis. I really love tennis. And to be honest, the last couple of years I haven't played as much in the colder weather. You know, I'm not really a regular member now at an indoor club, but I'll play as a guest occasionally. But I'll play in, you know, the 6 months of the warmer weather as much as I can outside. And really, I've had just minor lower back issues, which most people over 40 have. And just learning, you know, right stretches, which are both stretches and strengthening. So when I'm very good about doing that, I do a lot of stuff for both shoulders. Thankfully, I've never had a rotator cuff tear or anything, but I had, you know, little fraying or whatever. So you learn through physical therapy, and whatever you can then do at home without the equipment that's necessary, doing it makes a huge difference. So I think the stretching routines, I think, are very important, especially as we age.
Yeah, I've learned that also, and my wife's got me doing yoga and core strengthening and all that stuff. And I'm going to tell you something. If you don't give me good ski weather next winter, you're going to hear me screaming from Cape Ann again.
Well, the good news is we should be due after this winter for a better winter in terms of that. The concerning thing long-term, and that's a topic for another day, is, you know, long-term averages not working in the right direction if climate change continues and the pattern and the planet continues to gradually warm. But it won't be on an even change. It's not going to be like every year is snowless and warm,
right?
Or every winter. But it, you know, may happen a little more frequently in the future than it has in the past.
Well, I hope we can do that another time. But in the meantime, please stay with it. Don't give up your hours, because you're absolutely so much fun to watch. And thank you so much for taking all this time to talk with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. And Josh, you know, next time you have to get more words in edgewise. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Well, I will, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Harvey. Appreciate it.
You guys are great. Thanks for that.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Okay. That is the great Harvey Leonard. And, I'm sorry, but I just...
No, I thought about sharing a storm of the 78 blizzard story. We were out plowing in it. And my father was sick, and my brother and I had to do his accounts, and we had trouble getting back to the house.
Yeah.
You couldn't go up Moreland Road because there was a car and then a plow that went to get them stuck in a drift, and Atlantic Road was closed. And
it was tough getting out of the house, as I remember. Getting out of your front door or back door or whatever.
We pulled into East Gloucester Fire Station and put chains on the tires then just to be able to get travel on the roads.
I remember I was teaching, and I remember on Tuesday, Harvey said it was a Monday-Tuesday storm, and I don't remember the Monday part of it, but Tuesday I remember giving a small homework assignment and telling the kids that, you know, if it snows tonight, we get tomorrow off, then it'll be due on Thursday. And on my way home, I heard on WBZ radio that if there were any four-wheel drive vehicles in the area over by Rafe's Chasm, I guess it is,
yeah,
over there, please go over there because there was a boat headed up to the rocks, and I don't know if it was the Can-Do or not. But
the Can-Do was...
they were headed to Salem, I believe.
They were going to save somebody.
Right.
And then they had lots of people with spotlights trying to track them.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And I remember saying a four-wheel drive vehicle, boy, those are rare, because I think they were just in Jeeps in those days for the most part. And I do remember that. And then we were stuck in the house for days and days. And
you
then
had four-wheel drive in the truck, but you had to get out and turn something on the wheel to make it go into four-wheel drive.
And chains were prevalent back then. And I know I lived in Essex at the time. And to get into Gloucester, buy groceries, you had to come to Gloucester. And there was a barrier that the National Guard had set up. And
yep,
if you didn't have business in Gloucester, you weren't coming in.
Yeah.
You know, real business. And they did let us in. And they had the big, what do you call those things? The front end, not the front end loaders, but the great big scrapers, the giant, you know, eight-wheel drive.
They had a giant snow blower. It would cut
I don't think they had the big snow blower back then. They had the big earth mover. It was with the blade that goes at an angle. It's got 2, 4, 6, 8 wheels, I think, and the two wheels up front. I forget what that's called.
Yeah, I know. I can
yeah, they had that. And I don't think they had the great big snow blower at that time. I know I didn't have one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a great story he told.
Went
my
down,
goodness.
We were going down to check one of the estates on Eastern Point, and I said, "Wow, what? That's a huge puddle." It wasn't a puddle. The waves from Niles Beach. The waves were coming across people's lawns and breaking on the hedge in the front yard.
If you remember, that's one of the two times in the last century that the back shore got demolished. And every 20 or 30 years or so, you know, the growth climbs up there on the back shore, and then it gets knocked down. The road gets flushed out and knocked down. That, I think we're overdue, because the last one was the perfect storm back in 91, which is a story for another day.
Charlie DeRosa, when he was DPW director under Bill Rafter, somehow rigged the rebuild of that of the back shore that it's supposed to sustain any kind of storm, and there were lots of issues about whether they canned or whatever they did, and no one wants to talk about it, but it has held since then.
Not to be disrespectful, but that's quite a statement to say that it could withstand any storm.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if that happens, then if it works, then hopefully someone will copy his model elsewhere.
Yeah.
And I do know that who was I talking with? Was it, I can't remember, but we were interviewing someone about climate and foreseeing the future and so on and forecasting, and I know that you go up to Plum Island and you will see houses on stilts now.
Yeah.
You know, people are paying attention. We have to pay attention to the time. We're way overdue, and we also ask you to pay attention to what is suggested with respect to this coronavirus, because we'll get by it, but just do what you're supposed to do. Cancellation, the night at the races, I don't want to say it's canceled, but it is.
It's postponed.
It's suspended, postponed, and we'll follow all the other stuff. So on behalf of Bill Newell, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Josh Arnold, I'm Rick Moore. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you to our guests as well. Of course, to Channel 5's chief meteorologist, Harvey Leonard, to Brendan Pratt of Rotary, and the chair of Night at the Races. Also to Rich Fahey, the good old Rich, and he'll be on again. And we also appreciate Michelle Ellicks talking with us about the real ID. So that's it. Again, email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com, or
joshonald@verizon.net.
Thank you very much for being with us. This is Connections on MSO.